Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Patrick.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thanks for the quick reminder. I looked at my email. I was like, oh, yeah, shit. Let's do this.
All right. No worries.
Should is the audio fine, or do you need this to be on video chat, or how,
great
how
question.
Do you do this?
I actually normally do it audio only.
Okay, sounds great. Yeah, no one wants to look at me anyway. So.
Just easier to store the files, and then it conserves bandwidth in case the internet goes hanky.
Great.
All right. So, hey, if you're ready, we can just get started.
Yeah, no, let's go into it. I only hope I can talk as long as some of your other people have. There's some great interviews that you've done.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I'd say the entrepreneurs tend to be the chattiest.
Sure. And I'll probably mix some of that in. I don't know. We'll see.
Sure. Okay, so let's start with your year of graduation and your major.
So that's actually an interesting story. I walked across the stage in 2007, but I don't think I actually got my degree until maybe 2012. I was a half credit short in ensemble work.
Oh, no.
So, it's okay. I went back to I was a cello, person while I was there. And so I went back to the string department and they worked it out, which was great. My major was actually music business.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, and what was your principal instrument?
Principal instrument was...
I think you said cello.
Yeah, that was cello. I forgot that they call it principal instrument. I was searching for the right word there.
Yep.
Yeah, but cello, and I also play a fair amount of saxophone, but cello was the principal while I was there.
Understood. Okay. Well, we will get to your history later.
Sure.
But for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do?
I am a real estate agent at Keller Williams Realty right in the Back Bay of Boston.
They're pretty big, like, multi-office.
Yeah, they're the biggest real estate company by agent count across the globe. I think there's about 180,000 associates that, hang their license under the Keller Williams name. So it's, it's gigantic. I happen to work on a team. And so there's 9 of us on the team. I am a lead buyer agent. And so there's some people that are underneath me that I help train. And I focus really exclusively on representing buyers. And most of my time, I'd say most of my actual time is dealing with, first-time home buyers, people that want to move into a condo where they're living. And then secondly is investors that are looking to buy residential real estate and rent it out. So that's what I do. I could talk for hours about the intricacies of the job, but in a nutshell, in a broad overview, that's it.
So buyer's agent, and I forget, are you in the city of Boston?
Yeah, our office is 607 Boylston Street, a couple blocks down from the Uchida building. We're right in Copley Square.
Good. So when you're talking buyers, I assume you're talking buyers Back Bay, maybe downtown, maybe Fenway.
That's actually a really good question. Because I'm a buyer's agent and because of the way I was introduced to the industry, mm-hmm. I cover a very large geographical area. The core amount of my business is done inside the 95 belt. And the core of that is, Boston, Cambridge, Somerville, Chelsea, that area. But, I have a transaction going on out in Marlboro, Mass. Right now. I have another one that just closed in Brockton. I go all over. And a lot of agents choose not to do that. I do that by choice, and some of it's just the clientele that comes to me as well.
Sure. Yeah, I had a friend who actually worked as my buyer's agent, and she basically just did Somerville.
Lucky for her, I almost wish that I had a business that was like that. Maybe I'll craft it that way at some time. But for right now, I have car, wheel drive, I suppose.
Sure. Now, you describe yourself as a lead buyer's agent.
Correct.
I always sort of got the impression, having been through a few real estate transactions myself, the buyers have an agent, the sellers have an agent. So, like, what's the difference between just being a buyer's agent and being a lead one?
I suppose that's in the sense that our team is structured where we have 4 of us that work buyers, and I just happen to be the lead one on our team in the sense that I'm helping to train them and we'll help them through transactions because they're newer in the business. But in the sense of representing a client, there's nothing different other than I, I have experience, but, you know, many agents do.
Sure. My impression in terms of how real estate agents or buyer's agents get paid is it's either like a 50-50 or a 40-60 split. Is that pretty accurate? There's the 5% commission, and that's split among the agents?
Yeah, so in general, and it's funny, you know, being a licensed real estate in Massachusetts, I'm not supposed to talk about commissions in the sense of this is how it goes. But let's just say that, you know, you were selling your home.
Yep.
You work out with the agent that's representing you how much you're willing to pay them, whether that is 2% or 10%. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
And then that agent, when they go to market with your property, mm-hmm. they say, okay, great. Out of the 10% that, you know, I'm earning in commission, I'm going to share X amount with the person that's going to bring the buyer.
Got it.
And then internally, you know, that gets split up with, you know, brokerage, you know, taking a chunk out of it. We split things with our team. There's marketing costs, there's taxes. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, people think, oh, you're making these thousands of dollars on the transactions. Sometimes that's the case. Many times it's way less than that.
So how many transactions would you say you average per month, or if you wish, per year?
Last year, I think I did a total of 28 transactions. And it's hard to quantify per month, because there certainly will be months where there'll be, you know, four deals that come in, and other months where there might be nothing. We're working actually on ramping up our marketing efforts as a team. And so hopefully it stays very consistent from here on out, if not growing. And we purposely are doing that because we've taken on a bunch more agents in the last 6 months.
Sure. And hey, can I ask about in terms of how your salary is structured? Because, yeah, real estate agents earn commissions.
Totally. I'm 100% commission. Yes.
100% commissions. There's no base salary. There's no quota. It's just what you sell, what you get the commission, that's your income.
Correct. Now, there may be other agents out there that are working under, you know, what you, they call them rainmakers, who are supposed to provide all the listings, that may be structured as a salaried person. Mm-hmm. I personally don't think that's a great model for real estate, but then again, you know, if it works for those teams, it works for those teams. There's a brokerage called Redfin that does work off of that model. I happen to think it leads to lousy customer service, but there are some people out there that work on a salary basis.
Understood. And I could ask, I know there certainly are agents who do rentals, but it sounds like you focus on purchases.
I started out doing rentals and really doing that for probably the first 4.5 years of my career, you know, eventually managing the office that I started at as well, too. And, I did a lot of those. I mean, I probably overseen 3,000 rental transactions when you count the people that were under me doing deals as well, too.
But, yeah, I get the impression that actual buying and selling, if you're, you know, making it happen, is more lucrative than rental.
You know, it's very interesting. I would say that if you're crushing it at rentals in the city of Boston, you can make well over six figures and do that between January and, you know, September, and you can take, you know, the rest of the year off.
Wow.
I find what happens, and that's really that's a niche thing to Boston. Maybe, you know, in New York and a San Francisco and a Chicago might be the same. I don't think in many other cities that's possible. It's really Boston has a very unique rental market. What I like about working with, you know, buyers and sellers, because I refer sellers into our team and I get, you know, compensated for that as well. There's just more consistency with the person, you know, in the sense of, you know, I only have to get in front of, you know, I'm just going to say 50 people a year versus when you're doing the rentals, you're seeing maybe, you know, 3 to 4 groups a day, you know, going out and looking at apartments during the height of the season. And that, that can be taxing. And, you know, the older I get, the more that I'm not necessarily wanting to go out with 4 different people, you know, 4 different groups looking at, you know, 30 apartments.
Sure. Sure, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I like being home at 8 versus, you know, midnight, so.
Yeah. Hey, so would you mind telling us sort of about your typical day? Oh, and first, about,
sure.
I'm sure it varies by the time of the year and even by week, but, you know, on average, how many hours a week would you say you work?
Oh. You know, when I first started out in the business, I would say that I was averaging probably 80 hours a week, but I also looked at it as, you know, sort of that Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours principle. It's like, okay, how much time do I have to put in this to be really good at it? Much like if I'm going to be a cello player or a saxophone player or a guitar player, you know, most of us have to spend a good deal of time practicing. I think 10,000 hours is, you know, what he says,
right,
to be a master
hours
at something.
Of dedicated practice to.
Correct. Practice. You know, so when I first started out, there was probably, I'm sure there was weeks I went over 100 hours. I would say now, I'm going to go 60 hours a week on average is probably what I work. And and there's really no, you know, there's no set hours with that. You know, they're.
Right, the phone rings and they want a deal.
Yeah, and there's certainly plenty of people in this industry that, you know, they say, well, it's you know, it's your choice that you're operating that way. You know, a doctor, you know, has hours, like you can have hours too. And I have no problem talking with someone at 8 o'clock at night if that's what's good for them. And you know, I look at it as, you know, you have choices in real estate. You know, you can go find someone else, unfortunately, who can also talk to you at 8 o'clock at night, and that may be your prerogative. It's a customer service business in a lot of senses, so it is what it is.
Yeah, no, totally understood. So, hey, could you describe your typical day, or if you wish, typical week, or if
sure.
you're a typical transaction, I guess, however you want to parse it.
Oh, interesting. There's a lot of different ways
yeah,
to look at that.
Why don't we do typical day or week, and then we'll
sure. So, you know, typical day if. And I really try to time block as much as possible. And if I'm running a perfect day, and I unfortunately don't always stick to my time blocking, you know, I'm getting up probably around 5:30 in the morning, and that's when I have a lot of me time. I might be doing, you know, journal entries, trying to do exercise. I'm trying to incorporate more of that into my life now. I will have, you know, a affirmation partner that we really just do affirmations back and forth with one another.
An affirmation?
Sure. So an affirmation, what we do, and this is maybe a Keller Williams thing, but I think a lot of people do it, and it's something I really enjoy. We really just go back and forth proclaiming essentially, you know, the future that we're living into. And so I say, I'm totally making this up. You know, I love making, you know, $500,000 a year. I love working with the best clients on the planet, and I'm so grateful for being on an incredible team. And my affirmation partner will go, Patrick, you love making $500,000 a year. You love working with the best clients on the planet, and you are so grateful to work on such an incredible team. And then I'll affirm, you know, them as well.
Gotcha.
It's a very, you know, mentally positive and stimulating, you know, activity. It takes 5 minutes, but I love doing that.
Okay, go on.
I'm probably, you know, starting real work around 8 o'clock in the morning. And what I mean by that is I'm doing either lead generation, contacting new people that I haven't talked to before, or following up with people that I have talked to before that I know. And it's always focused primarily on real estate. You know, I may call you up and we may just, you know, talk one time and say, hey, Kevin, that was a great interview. Have you found any other great interviews? But ultimately, my goal is to just say, hey, do you know anyone looking to buy or sell real estate? And, you know, it's either a yes or a no. If it's a no, that's fine. I move on. Say, great, I'll call you in a couple months. Take care. And I'm doing that hopefully for 2 to 3 hours. When I'm done with that, I'm usually checking in with the other members of my team, seeing what they're doing, what transactions are going on, how we can push things forward. After lunch, I'm focusing on the deals that are on the table right now for me and under contract. And, you know, do I need to talk to an attorney about something? Do I need to talk with the lender about something? Do I need to talk with the other agent on the other side of the deal about something? around 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm focused on any physical appointments I have that day, whether I'm meeting a new client for coffee and talking about, you know, their goals and their dreams, or if I'm actually going out and showing homes. Hopefully I'm done and back to my house by around 8 o'clock at night. Sometimes it's earlier, sometimes it's later. But that's about it. And then I finally get to see my wife and my dog, and, you know, we go to bed and we do it all over again.
Understood. So, hey, can you walk us kind of through, I'm sure transactions are, you know, you have a lot of untypical ones, but a typical
sure.
one where things don't go haywire, sort of how's it go from beginning to end?
And like, sure.
How long
so,
a time window are we talking about?
The biggest probably, there's two major factors that contribute to the time window. One is if you're going out and looking to purchase a home, you're either talking to a lender to get pre-approved first, or you're discussing an agent, and the agent is going to say, hey, let's go talk to a lender. So usually the pre-approval process, it can go as fast as 24 hours. The issue is after that 24 hours, are you actually pre-approved to buy a home? If you're not, sometimes for some people it can take 6 months to a year or more of getting things in order financially to be in a place where, you know, they'll be able to get a mortgage. Once they have that piece of paper and they know that they're at least pre-approved, yes, the bank hasn't gone through with a fine-tooth comb, you know, their financial situation. They will once they get a, you know, an offer accepted and they actually apply for the mortgage. But once they get the pre-approval, it's then time to go looking for properties. And I, no lie, the market is really tough right now to be a buyer in the Boston area. So, you know, it's
things
not unheard of.
So much in 5 or 6 years.
Oh, I mean, I okay. I look at it this way: the first sale transaction I ever did was a condo in Rosendale, right outside Rosendale Square. If anyone knows the area now, it's booming. And it was a top floor, small two bed, you know, not a nice little place. And I remember that when we wrote the offer, we had a home inspection contingency, and we on the contingency we said if there was anything wrong with the condo, you know, in the inspection report, we had the ability to renegotiate or walk away. Well, fast forward to today, not only would the price of that condo be significantly higher, but if I were to write something like that on an inspection contingency, there's no way it would be accepted. I mean, you have people that are waiving inspection contingencies and saying, no, I don't even want to do one. I'm just going to take the property as is. And certainly you have people saying, listen, I'm going to do an inspection. It's just for my peace of mind. You know, I'm willing to do work up to $50,000, you know, if something is wrong. And so it's changed a lot in that time period.
Gotcha. Wow. Okay.
But as a buyer, you know, when you are – you can find a property your first day out. I think what is the toughest part is coming to terms with the market and realizing that a property may be priced at $499, but the actual market value might be $520, $525. Someone might think it's $550. And so it sounds crazy when I say, hey, Kevin, I know you like that condo. And I know it's listed at $499, and it's great that you want to make an offer for that. But here's the reality. I think the condo is probably worth $430, and we're probably going to have to put in something close to that to be considered. I mean, that just doesn't make a lot of sense to most people. It's like,
you mean $530, right? Like if it was
$530, yeah, sorry. And, you know, most people go – I think the natural reaction is, who's this real estate agent telling me I got to pay $30,000 over, you know, the asking price to get the condo? I mean, that would be my gut instinct too. You know, it seems crazy, but a lot of the times that's unfortunately the market that we're in.
Right.
So it can take a month, it can take 2 months, depending on what you're looking for, and if you're not willing to bend any of your requirements, mm-hmm. it could be a 6 month process to find a home. You know, if you're dead set on, I want to be in this, you know, quarter mile area in the city, and it has to have 2 full bathrooms, and there has to be, you know, a covered parking space. That can take a while for that inventory to come up.
Sure. Okay, so once someone finds something they like,
yep.
What do you do next?
So in general, the quickest that – I mean, at that point, there's some contingencies that we go through. I never advise a client to ever drop an inspection contingency. We're usually, you know, doing that within 7 to 10 days of an offer being accepted. Once we get through that contingency, we're signing what's called a purchase and sale agreement. And that's essentially taking what was put down on the offer and the lawyers making it legally sound and binding. Not that the offer isn't binding, it is, but the purchase and sale is where you're putting down probably about 5% of the total purchase price, maybe a little bit less. Right. Some people are putting down more just to, you know, try to sweeten their deal at that point. And that's where the attorney and the bank really takes over. Most of the time, a deal can close from when an offer is accepted. It can be done in 30 days. That's quick. That's really when you have a team in place where the agent, the attorney, the lender are really all on the same page, and they've been doing this for a while, and it's like clockwork. 45 days to 60 days can be more typical. And a lot of the times in this current market, it's really what the seller wants. If the seller says, hey, listen, I need 60 days to close because that's just what they want, you're usually, you know, finding that out ahead of time and adjusting your offer to make sure that the seller has the time that they need or they want.
Sure, makes sense. Okay, so, and by the way, how do you get your clients?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I really, since I started in this industry, was very heavy on social media, and I don't think there's anyone that's not connected with me, that I don't think there's anyone that is connected with me on social media, whether it be Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, that doesn't know that I do real estate. I mean, that's my life, and I really love it. So a lot of my clientele comes from just people I know and, you know, referrals from past clients. I'm really lucky in that regards. But at the same time, you know, I go to open houses and I work open houses because I want to meet people that are out there as buyers. And, you know, hopefully, you know, there's a connection there and, you know, they like me and I like them and we choose to work together. And a lot of it comes from, you know, marketing that we do of properties that our team lists, and buyers that are, you know, saying, hey, I'm interested in this property. A lot of the leads come that way as well too. And, you know, converting those into clients, and that can be a little bit hard. Cause there's a fine line when someone says, hey, I'm interested in this property you have listed, to taking them through a conversion process to where they're signing paperwork and saying, yeah, we want to work with you, Patrick. You know, at any point in time, if you, you know, start saying the wrong thing, you're becoming too quote unquote salesy, you can easily lose people. I mean, these are people that you do not know at all. They're not connected to you whatsoever. They're literally an email, you know, from online. But that's a huge part of the business as well too.
Do you mind sharing your tricks? Because it seems like you're pretty successful at this. Like, what are your tricks or your general guidelines for getting people to work with you?
You know, I don't know that I have any tricks other than my overarching philosophy is that, you know, I'm here to help someone and educate them and consult them to making the right decision for them. And a lot of times that right decision isn't let's go buy a property right now. A lot of times it's, hey, we need to hold off for a year or two. Totally fine. I really, really, I'm not attached to, and I'm lucky to be in that position, you know, and I've always taken this. It's not about the money to me. It's about helping people and adding value to their lives. And I know that if I do that, money is going to come. That's just the way, I think that's the way the world works. So I'm never trying to sell someone something. Great. If they like that home, terrific. If they don't like that home, I don't care. You know, let's talk about what you're looking for. Let's see if that's even, you know, a possibility. So, you know, there's no secret sauce in terms of, well, I always say this. No, I care about the person and I care about them making the right decision. And I think if you talk to, especially some of my investor clients, you'll hear that I tell them no more often than I say yes. People that want to buy, like let's say, I want to buy, you know, what do you think about this project? And, you know, because of a location or a price point or what I think the returns are, I tell them no. And I don't know. That's just I care about the person. I don't want to ever, you know, look back 10 years from now and go, man, I wish I didn't do that with Emily, you know, and, you know, because I want Emily to be a raving fan. And so that every time Emily says, or someone goes to Emily, hey, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, a house or an apartment. I want Emily to go, oh, you should talk to Patrick. He's great. So that's my philosophy. And I think that's just, I approach every conversation that way.
Sure, sure. So, hey, sort of to tangent off that, and I could definitely hear it in your voice, to qualify for these interviews, you have to enjoy what you do.
Of course.
And I'd like you just to sort of articulate a little bit, what is it about your career or your field that you enjoy?
There's so much, and it's...
Well, let her rip. We got time.
Sure. Yeah. So first and foremost, I just on Friday, I came out of a 2-week hospital stay, and I was in there because I had blood clots post the surgery.
Oh, wow.
There's no one that is going, when are you going to be back at work? What, you know, what's going on? You know, what do you mean 2 weeks? Hey, it's been 12 days. When are you coming back to work? The sense of, you know, I'm my own boss is amazing. I mean, I can't tell you how much I enjoy that freedom. I think if I was, you know, at a 9-to-5 and, you know, I would hate that. And that's just me. You know, the ability to pick up and say, hey, I'm going on vacation next week. See you guys when I get back. The ability to, you know, take off a Tuesday morning and go to the grocery store then versus, you know, Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's that stuff I absolutely love. And there's plenty of real estate agents that will be listening to this and going, he's making the exact wrong choices. He should be more disciplined with his time. But the fact is, that's a huge plus. I also, you know, I'll say this, and, you know, this goes back probably to my philosophy. I love the feeling of helping people. And, you know, it's gratifying to be able to make an income and, you know, carve out a career where I feel I'm actually making a difference in people's lives. And, you know, I mean, when someone is going to buy a piece of property or sell a piece of property, it's emotional. It's not easy. You're signing probably the biggest check that you've ever signed. You're making the biggest investment that you've ever made. These aren't things that I think anyone does lightly. You know, and when you're selling, there's emotional attachments to a home, and being able to help people through that process and especially educate them on, you know, what the market is doing and what the best way to go about, you know, achieving their goal is, that's really great. And that's probably my biggest love of the industry. I don't feel that I'm selling things. I actually feel that I'm helping people. And I don't know, maybe it's crazy that I look at it that way, but I've always looked at it that way. And it's really... It's a gift. I look at it as a gift.
All right. That's great. So, hey, let's take it back to 2007 now.
Sure.
Or earlier, if you wish. There you are, Berkeley music business major, Joe player. I don't know. Were you thinking real estate agent at the time, or
what was no.
So what was your headspace then? And I'd like you to take us kind of one step at a time, your headspace of what you were doing from then to now.
So, probably starting around 2000, I'm going to say 2004, 2005, I started to, you know, I got involved with a band at Berkeley, you know, as everyone does. And I thought the musicians were just phenomenal. I had played in bands all throughout high school, and I'd actually gone to the conservatory for a year before Berkeley, and
yeah,
you know, I
love the same school now, you know.
Yes, I know, it's fantastic. and I love playing. I love playing in, you know, a pop rock setting more than anything. So I loved playing with the band, and you know, I thought the musicians were incredible. I figured, you know, let's put all the energy here. So, you know, as it's coming up to graduation, we had done a few minor tours here and there, nothing big by any means, but, you know, I thought the songwriting was great. I enjoyed playing the tunes. I figured, let's do this. And when I graduated, there were some people who I knew at Berkeley that had said, hey, you'd be good at real estate. Other like class members. And, you know, they talked about, you know, their friend who, you know, did apartment rentals for the summer and, you know, was able to buy all new equipment for themselves, you know, just off of doing that. And I was like, oh, this sounds amazing. You know, great. Sign me up. So when I graduated Berkeley, I took my exam to get a real estate license. And
so quick pause. Just want to sort of make sure I'm understanding this.
Cause yes.
You're still in the band.
And yes.
So this was kind of like a kind of day job, side job while the
My thought was this is going to fund the music, essentially.
Uh-huh.
You know, and grandiose dreams in that regards, as it turned out to be. So, you know, when I graduated from Berkeley, I took the course to get my real estate license. A couple months later, I got the license. I didn't do anything with it. In fact, I was working. I had moved back to my parents' house in Beverly post-graduation.
Okay.
Actually, I'd lived there for, you know, probably the final 3 years of Berkeley, and I was on like a 7-year plan. Don't even give me – anyways. you know, I moved back there, and I started working at the North Shore Music Theater, literally parking cars, cleaning toilets, doing landscaping work. I didn't do anything with the real estate until January of 2008. Where my mother, you know, essentially said, hey, you need to get a real job. You know, this isn't working. And she, for some reason, thought being in real estate was a real job. So
and
I started working
your
license, for.
So she's like, okay, you should keep.
Yeah. You know, and it was probably the kick that I needed anyways. You know, my mom essentially threatening, you know, to start charging rent for me living in my, you know, the room I grew up in as a little kid. So I started working in January of 2008 at a brokerage out in Alston. By my standards, I think I crushed it the first 3 months. I was able to move out and get my own apartment with a couple, you know, roommates who also worked in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And then
How did you get that first job doing apartment rentals in Alston?
There was a Craigslist ad for hiring agents. And I called and I said, hey, I have a license. I want to, you know, I want to become an agent. I walked into this interview, and I'm best friends today with the woman that actually interviewed me and hired me there. But I didn't bring a resume. I didn't, you know, I mean, it was, you know, she asked me about that. I said, why would you want to see my resume? It talks all about music. Like, you know, you want to know the bands and the orchestras I played in. And, you know, that is like, it has nothing to do with anything. So, you know, and they're a company that as many brokerages are, you know, it's like, hire as many people as possible, see who sticks to the wall type of deal. So,
because it's commission again, so they can give a lot of people a chance.
Correct. And little did I know that, you know, essentially anyone gets hired walking in there, you know, if you have a pulse. So I think I was better than just having a pulse, but, you know, they took a flyer on me and it worked out. So
you did well. You were renting apartments, yeah, making a living for yourself.
Yep, correct. And it felt amazing because, you know, it was the first time in my life that I was actually, you know, really, I mean, yes, I made money off of doing music here and there, but it was not enough to, you know, support living in an apartment and having a car and those sorts of things. At least for me, it wasn't back at, you know, God, was I 25, 24, whatever it was. So it was probably towards the end of the summer of 2008 where the leader of the band was moving back to California where he lived. And as much as I liked California, I wasn't willing to take the risk monetarily of going there because I knew what I could make here. I had no clue what I would do out there. And I was just done with living the, you know, sleeping on friends' floors, you know, type of life. As much as I enjoyed it for when I did it, I was just done at that point. And, you know, I know so many of my contemporaries at Berkeley went down to New York, went to Nashville, went to L.A. Well, you know, I'm from Boston originally. I kind of hate New York in that sense. It's just part of my blood. Nashville, I didn't want to even hear about it. Don't talk to me about Nashville. And L.A., I just didn't like. You know, I'd spent some time there, and I don't know. It just it didn't jive. So I decided to stay in Boston and sort of really – I mean, the real estate was already taking over at that point because, you know, they would have some practices during the day and I wouldn't necessarily go to them because I would have showings and be with clients. So the real estate was starting to take over, and it was really probably for me, you know, I'm not going to say financially free at the age of 25 or 24, but it felt like that at that time to me.
Sure. Sure.
So the band essentially moved to California, and I stayed here. And as much as I kept playing in a few things, and I still do, it's real estate all the time, and it has really been since 2008.
Cool. So can you just sort of do at least the short version of how has your real estate career progressed? Because you somehow went from, you know, renting apartments at Alston to being the lead buyer's rep.
Yeah, sure. I know, it doesn't sound like too much of a step up, I guess. But so, you know, as I was getting better at doing more transactions, I mean, I think a lot of the times, you know, you either have like leadership qualities or you don't, and I don't even know what gives me those sorts of things. But, you know, probably my second and a half, you know, year, 2.5 years into real estate, I started actually hiring people at the office I was working at and managing the office.
Was this a Keller Williams or another place?
No, this was a smaller, a huge apartment rental, but a boutique, you know, essentially independent brokerage in Austin still at this point.
Gotcha.
And so I was managing the office for a while. And, you know, to me, the office didn't have as many resources as something like Keller Williams does in terms of training and education. But I knew that I needed to get that anyways. So I'm seeking out, you know, blogs and webinars and, you know, just reading my tail off. I mean, I would get to the office at 6 a.m. and just, you know, be studying real estate from, you know, 6 to 9 a.m. You know, in terms of, you know, just reading about the Boston market because, you know, hey, I was familiar with Austin. I was familiar with parts of Brookline. I was familiar with the Fenway, but I didn't know what was going on in East Boston, so I needed to learn that. And then, you know, at the tail end of the day, I would sit there in the multiple listing service and just look at, you know, okay, what sold for what? You know, why did this one sell for $600 and this one sold for $450 and that sold for $800? Just really gaining market knowledge. And so for 6.5 years or 6 years, I worked at the firm out in Austin. And it was great. There was a ton of business.
Apartments or were you getting into sales?
No. I started to get into sales there as well, too, and I did sales while I was there. But what forced the move, and I love the broker who was out there in the sense that he had great business acumen, and I really respected that. I mean, the guy was doing very good business. Maybe not necessarily all the agents that worked for him, but you know, listen, if I could have financially traded places with him, I would have been a second. You know, so I really learned a lot of fantastic, you know, just business practices from him from the standpoint in little things as, you know, how do you answer your phone? How do you leave a professional voicemail? You know, your time management skills, those sorts of things. It was really invaluable. But what started to happen was the spring of 2014, I was getting more aggressive with going after listing properties. And I probably sat down at the kitchen table with, you know, I would have said that spring, maybe 8 potential sellers. And, you know, they all had essentially the same feedback for me, which was, Patrick, we think your number is great. You know, you seem fantastic. But there's this guy from Coldwell Banker that has sold 10, you know, in the neighborhood in the last year. You know, it looks like you have the same approach as he does, but he's done it so many times and we see his signs everywhere. We're gonna work with him. So, you know, eventually I realized that I didn't have, unfortunately, a name behind me. And I also knew I didn't quite have the training, even though my numbers might have been, you know, my valuations were the same as the other people. I didn't have a technique of, hey, I need to say this right now, which, you know, when I moved over to Keller Williams in the summer of 2014, I started to really learn that at a professional level. You know, like, how do you interact with the seller? Like, what are the things you say? And it's okay to have a script. You know, everything that I'm saying even right now is technically a script because it's coming out of my mind. And it's okay if I rehearse something and always say X at the end of a conversation to someone. So I really started to learn, you know, the language of sales in that sense, which unfortunately was just the one thing that was sort of lacking at the old brokerage. Otherwise, I'd probably be there.
Sure. So you moved to Keller Williams, and I'm sure they're advertising for people a lot, or was this a personal connection?
So here's how it worked. I had one of my best friends who had actually been an agent at my old brokerage began working as they call them market center administrators, essentially the person that cuts the checks at the Keller Williams in Boston. And she started to talk to me about culturally what Keller Williams is like. And it's really it's an agent centric company that does the right thing at every turn, as much as I think, you know, a huge, you know, company can, mm-hmm. in the sense of putting people first and valuing the agents that are actually bringing in business versus valuing, the marketing strategies. I mean, you don't see Keller Williams ever do national, you know, advertising the way other big firms will. And that's, they do that for a reason. They profit share back to the agents. It's a phenomenal company. But then the training and the education that they have within their company is just, it's world class. It's amazing. In fact, Gary Keller, he started Keller Williams, he always says that Keller Williams is a training company that just happens to do real estate. And, you know, they were the number one training organization, you know, in the world, not just out of real estate companies the last 2 years in a row. And now he's changing his motive that we're a technology company that's focused on real estate. So he's even shifting, you know, the big vision of the company. And so the way I actually finally got into Keller Williams was because I wanted to move brokerages and I wanted to go work for a team. Part of that is maybe because it was sort of a team atmosphere at my old office. But I was very nervous about leaving the database that my old broker had. I mean, he had a database of, you know, 150,000 landlords that I could pick up the phone and talk to and source business from. I wasn't going to have that when I left, so I was nervous in that regards, and I always wanted to join a team. It was probably in 2013 where I actually did a transaction representing a buyer, and Kathleen Alexander, who is the principal agent on our team, represented the seller. She saw the way that I worked and really thought that that was fantastic. And so she started talking to me, and I was talking to her, and eventually I said, "Yeah, let's do this. I'd love to go into business with you."
Gotcha. And yep. It sounds like you went there, got a lot of training, started selling moving houses, and kind of worked your way somewhat up.
Yeah, correct. And you know, it's funny. It was a very small team when I started out in the summer of 2014. In the sense that it was Kathleen. It was me, and it was Charlotte. Charlotte is of she was born in San Francisco but raised in Taiwan, so she has a very niche business of a lot of international Chinese clientele. And it's amazing. But Kathleen, as much as it was a small team, she has a huge vision of being, you know, a real estate team that works across the New England region, but across the country, having different expansion teams and eventually globally. Kathleen makes she wants to be a billionaire. And I figure if that's her vision, you know, one, I love it. You know, how many people do you ever hear say, "Hey, I want to be a billionaire." I mean, and really believe it, not just saying, "Hey, I'd like to be," you know, like she's making a roadmap to where she hopefully can one day get that. And I'm thinking, okay, if she wants to be a billionaire, you know, I could just be the second or third in command here and I'll be okay, I think. I love the big vision that she has for the team and where we're going globally. I love the feeling of being a part of that. I'm helping to, you know, run things on a day-to-day operation and taking over more of that and taking over some of the hiring of the agents that are coming on. And I used to hire, but this is a totally different process. And it's much more, you know, it used to be me just sitting in a room with someone with their resume going, you know, okay, do I like this person or not? Now it's really, you know, we have systems in place where there's personality tests and, you know, we're going through, you know, a 5-step interview process to really make sure that this person is not only the right fit with our team culturally, but actually a right fit for the position, because they might fit with us culturally, but they might not be good for being an actual real estate agent. They might be better as an administrative assistant somewhere. And so we really are trying to, you know, get the hiring process to the point where we're finding talent and we're putting them in the right place so that they can succeed.
Gotcha. Hey, you don't have no need to give like hard numbers, but I'm curious, like, how does your income compare now to how it was where you were working at your previous place?
I have no problem giving you hard numbers. So at my previous place, I'm going to say my first year, my tax, you know, what my 1099 would have said, I'm going to say $45,000, which again, for, you know, the first year in the industry and really having just worked, you know, through the summertime and the spring, I thought it was outrageous. I was a pig in shit. my best year there, when I was also managing part of the office, which took up a ton of time and I probably wasn't doing it the right way, mm-hmm. I think was $75,000 on the 1099. And then last year was, let's see, the 1099 was, I think, $107,000.
Oh, that's substantial improvement, and as you say, it's on an upward trajectory as well.
Yeah, no, correct. I mean, much bigger goals this year, and knock on some wood, we'll get there too.
Not to denigrate $107,000, that's real money.
Oh, I mean, listen, and I don't necessarily think that, I mean, money is good for the good that it can do, you know, in the sense that I can, you know, provide for, you know, my hopefully at one point growing family and myself, and you know be independent that way, and one day eventually start to be able to give back to some of the charities and foundations and things that I appreciate in the work that they do. Right. And you know, listen, money's great. I mean, I want to be able to take a nice vacation, right? I want all that stuff, but at the same time, I, you know, happiness comes from, you know, being fulfilled with what you're doing. So you know, if I made $107,000 for the rest of my career, I would still be happy, because I'm choosing to be happy because I like what I'm doing.
Great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Well, hey, let's move on to the third part of the interview.
Sure.
Of three. So you alluded to this earlier, but tell us, what is your current relationship with music?
Ah, so it's very interesting. I right now I play saxophone, tenor sax, in a Billy Joel cover band called Heart Attack Ack 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 Ack, and yes, and a Huey Lewis cover band called The Power of Love.
Nice.
And the Power of Love, they just played a show down in Connecticut, a pretty good show. I mean, our drummer runs that band, and there's 10 people in it. Most of them have kids. It's crazy. We at our most, we probably have played, you know, four shows a year. It's like, you know, how often can you, you know, sit there and play Huey, you know, songs and have people come out? Certainly we didn't think it was every Friday night, nor did we all want to do that every Friday night.
It's casual, but it's fun.
It was. And listen, but we, you know, we would sell out the Sinclair and downstairs at the Middle East. So we had a lot of those guys come from touring bands they used to be in touring bands that were Boston based. So there's a lot of built-in fans there. Now the Heart Attack Ack Ack band is probably playing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm
are you
say,
still in the Huey Lewis?
I am. Although there's no set date that we have in the future to play. I mean, I'm sure it will come up when the opportunity arises,
sure.
And when Randy, our drummer, says, you know, hey, I'm going to put more time into this right now. Gotcha. You know, they just did get a gig in Connecticut. Unfortunately, I had, you know, had surgery 3 days before, so I did not get up on stage for that one, but that's okay.
Gotcha.
And the Billy Joel band is we got about five gigs lined up over the summertime, including playing on Yawkey Way for a Fenway gig on August 1st. So I couldn't be happier that I get to play in those things, and there's other people that are running and manage those, and I am so blessed to be able to essentially show up to sort of like one practice ahead of time and, you know, just, you know, sit in and play the show.
Right. It's something you do for fun.
Correct. And yes, there might be, a $50 to $100 check at some point and a beer and a, you know, a plate of chicken fingers.
Right. Totally.
And I also play in a string quartet. I used to play in the Wellesley Symphony for about a decade, and I play with we play anywhere from once a month to once every other month, just reading string quartet music purely for fun in our violist's house.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Right, so you're still doing music and having fun with it.
I am, and that's the best part for me, is that it started to feel like when I was doing and I was trying to do some gigging, you know, back at the end of my Berklee days, it felt like work. I mean, it really started to feel like work, and I did not like that one bit. It feels fun now.
That's wonderful. All right, so hey, I'd like you to, so, not in terms of the music, but in terms of the real estate.
Yep.
So I'd like you to think back now to your Berklee education.
Yep.
And let's say at least relative to going to, you know, some other college and studying history or whatever.
Sure.
Is there anything that you feel that your experience at Berklee did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing now?
That's, you know, yes. And I would say that's probably because I specifically chose to do music business.
That's right. Keep going.
And mentally, when I made the decision to go, well, so my first year of college, I was a cello performance guy at the Boston Conservatory. Mm-hmm. And the best thing that probably ever happened to me was the head of the string department, Andy Mark, who's also a cello player. You know, he essentially told me about halfway through the year, and this was in front of a room of other, you know, performance majors there. He said, if you're not going to practice, Patrick, you better go work at Dunkin' Donuts. And fair enough. I was, you know, 18, and I was not into practice as much as I was into, you know, the extracurricular activities that one can find themselves in college. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I really took that to heart. I transferred to Berklee, you know, the next year, and I specifically said, all right, what can I do here at Berklee? You know, and I always thought to myself, okay, if I'm a musician at any point in my life, I can decide to lock myself in the practice room and take lessons and do that for X amount of years straight and come out on the other end and be whoever I want to be, you know, with my talent level and my practice abilities as a musician. And I looked at it and I said, this business thing seems interesting because at least I can learn some, you know, even if I, you know, went into the dental field for somehow, you know, being an office administrator, the business principles stay the same, whether it's the music industry or the real estate industry or the health industry or, you know, the higher education field. I mean, business is business. Right. So I would say that a lot of that preparation, while I probably didn't take it as seriously as I should have, you know, looking back on it now, just the basic fundamentals of business are, I think, just very important. And I think, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people don't like focusing on that for whatever reason. I find it fascinating. You know, I love that entrepreneurial spirit. I love reading about that stuff. I have friends that are entrepreneurs and started startups in the Boston area. It's phenomenal. And I just, I think the faculty at Berklee was phenomenal in that regards in terms of giving it to you straight about how, you know, it is, you know, especially within the music business. But I can see a lot of the things that they talked about, you know, in the theories essentially that they were talking about translating into real estate for sure.
Are there any particular faculty you feel did a especially outstanding job?
Martin Dennehy, who was accounting.
Accounting, yeah.
Yeah, he was amazing. Jeff Dornfeld was incredible. Those two guys I really I took a lot away from. Sky, what was Sky's last name? I am not going to remember his last name. People are going to probably cringe at me for that, but Jeff Dornfeld and Marty Dennehy really made some big impressions on me. You know, I really enjoyed, you know, they were just so down to earth, so real, so raw. You know, there was, no sugarcoating it. Not that I think any, you know, of the faculty, you know, sugarcoated things at all, but they were great.
Okay, great. So, hey, let's take the question now and kind of turn it around.
Okay.
Because Berklee does give that one degree, a bachelor's in music degree.
Yep.
And, you know, so you went, well, first to BOCO and then to Berklee.
Yes.
Knowing that.
Yep.
But all that said, you know, when you look back at your Berklee education, is there anything where you say, you know, it would have been really useful to have learned this when I was in college, and they really could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
Anything missing? Yeah, so, I think in general, there's not enough education around financial management for people. You know, I mean, listen, I took economics classes for sure, but, you know, basic things as much as, you know, balancing a damn checkbook, you know, and listen, I don't know that that's a Berklee issue. Well,
when
you
say
go back to
financial management, you mean like your personal finances?
Yeah, yeah, correct. I think that's just lacking in, you know, education in general. And that's not necessarily a Berklee thing. That could go back to the Cove Elementary School in Beverly, you know, Massachusetts, where I went to public schools there. I mean, there was none of that stuff. I think that would be huge for everyone in general. You know, in terms of concrete stuff that relates to my, you know, industry I'm in now and things that I picked up, I don't know that you can teach the real world experiences you have from getting out there. I mean, and part of it is, you know, they're teaching to 18 to 22 year olds. Your brain isn't fully developed then. You know, I mean, sitting there and listening to some of those lectures when I wanted to go outside and, you know, have a beer, do drugs, look at girls, you know, there's a disconnect there too. And, you know, so I don't know that there's any way to get that real world experience. You know, once I started picking up the phone and talking to people that own, you know, major apartment complexes in Boston and seeing, you know, what they're focused on and starting to care about what they care about. There's no way to really teach that. And, you know, off the top of – it's funny. I feel like this question I would want to come back to in a week and give another answer. But at this point, you know, no, I don't know that there's anything that they I would say, hey, I would have liked to learn that other than that personal financial management.
Got it. If you have a flash of inspiration anytime, feel free to email it to me.
Sure. I will do.
All right. So, hey, next question is, looking back – you actually had a very direct path, or at least a pretty direct path, right? You're thinking real estate, you get your license, you try a little other music stuff, you're not making much money, your mother gives you a little kick in the pants, what, 8 months
yeah,
after graduation?
Pretty much,
you
yep.
go into real estate, you start doing well, you keep moving up, you know, move up. Now, even to Keller Williams, doing
yep.
even better for yourself.
Yeah, no, I feel lucky in that regard.
Right.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think we'd both agree that for graduation, you have maybe one or two tiny wiggles, but pretty much a straight line to where you are now.
Totally. I mean, it was like an 8 month vacation essentially, and then you know went right at it. Yep.
Yep. So, I'm sure you can imagine that not everyone has had that easy, or I don't want to say easy,
of course,
that direct a path.
Sure.
And,
yep.
In fact, probably there are some recent grads who haven't even found that path at all.
Yep.
Maybe like you were before on your
sure.
vacation, but their vacation
yep.
lasted over 8 months.
I have no doubt that's the case.
And, of course, also people even in their last year at Berklee starting to go like, oh, my God, what am I going to do?
Yep, of course.
So, hey, for either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
The greatest thing about finding a love of real estate was that it wasn't that, you know, I loved selling a place or renting an apartment. It was that I was in control. So essentially I was operating my own business. In the musician world, at least from what I see from afar at this point, because, you know, far be it for me to comment on that at the moment, you have to be an entrepreneur. And I think you have to be that in any business. And you also have to be a marketer. this is something I took from Gary Vaynerchuk. We are all marketers. I don't care if you're a dentist or you're, a real estate agent or, the plumber or, a guy fixing, cars. You're a marketer first and foremost, and then you're a dentist or an auto repair guy or a real estate agent. So those are just things that I think everyone has to learn, and especially as a musician. There's a difference between, a Facebook post that says, hey, I'm playing Friday night at 8 o'clock, and one that, you're sharing a picture from the last gig and you're sharing, audio clip. And, there's different ways to go about everything. So I do think that people have to you have to take on that entrepreneurial spirit. You have to take on that idea of, I'm a marketer because this is, this is me. If I'm going to make it in music, it seems to me that you're going to make it, on your own accord, much like most people will in the real estate industry. I think that's huge.
Just figure out the marketing angle.
Yeah. And brush up on your business skills on, how to approach people. And, when you have phone calls, when you have things that are scheduled, be on time, be early, take it seriously. Mm-hmm. You never know when and be open to opportunities. I think that's another huge key. It's very easy to brush off people and to, especially when you're in a situation like that 8-month vacation period where, not much anything really is exciting happening. It's easy to get down on that stuff. But when an opportunity comes around, don't just pass on it because maybe you think you're not interested or maybe that person isn't cool enough. You have no clue who they know. You have no clue what that can lead to. So don't pass that stuff up, especially when you're in that stage. You're developed and, you're playing keyboards for Taylor Swift. You do whatever you want, but do not pass it up when you're in that in-between stage and you're trying to figure it out. Take every opportunity you can get and go network with people. It's funny. It's like, as a real estate agent, okay, if I have a day where I'm not doing anything, well, I should be walking up and down, Broadway. I live in Everett right now. I should be walking up and down, going in and introducing myself to, the owner of the pizza place and, the owner of the drugstore and, the bar across the street and talking with them about real estate and their needs and, just telling them that I do real estate. So, you want to just network with people. If you're a musician out there and you're trying to cut it, in that period post-Berkeley and you haven't found out what you want to do but you love music, start. There's probably other people in a nearby radius that love music and are in that as well too. Go start a networking group with them. It's create your own thing. If it's not coming to you and you're hoping that someone's going to give it to you, go create it. Because I think the biggest sin that a lot of us have, and I'm sure I did back in that age, was I thought it was going to happen because of someone else. I thought someone was going to see the band and sign us to a record label and book tours and shows. No, it's like you have to go and create that stuff. So if you want it, go and make it. And I think that can happen in any industry. I really do. I mean, yes, if you want to be, a heart surgeon, well, there's a couple things you have to do ahead of time. You probably can't create that on your own. But short of that and maybe being a lawyer, go create it. Go make it happen. Do not wait for it to come to you because chances of it coming to you, never say never. It could happen, but I think that's few and far between.
Absolutely. So, hey, let's just focus in just a little bit because I figure you're something like my 76th or 77th interview.
Whoa.
Yeah. And my second person in real estate. I thought there would be more, but
oh, wow.
Thrilled to have you.
Oh, so. Great. Happy to be here.
So, point is, very few people are going down the line listening to all of them. The people
I can imagine.
Right. The people who are listening to this interview are going to be the ones who are like, real estate agent. Hey, that's cool. What's that like?
Sure. Yep.
So for people who are like, hey, real estate, like, that gets cool. How could I break into it? Or at least, how could I break into it in a way that I don't end up in one of those just, meat grinder places that hires 10 people expecting 2 to be there next week. or maybe they moved away.
Like, yep.
Do you have any advice for them? People think about the real estate career maybe at the very beginning of this.
Sure. So you have to get a license. It's not hard to do. It is a little bit of upfront money. It's probably a $400 class, and it's probably a $100 test. And then, congratulations, you passed. Give us, $150 for, the privilege of having a license. So there is some upfront cost there, but you have to do that. So however it is, whatever you have to borrow, whatever personal loan you got to take out, whatever, family member you have to talk to, go and do that. And then look for a brokerage that has phenomenal training. And, don't just go in and interview with one place. Go and interview with a lot of them. And really, I mean it when I say training. Make sure you know what the training is like and do your own independent research on that. It's not about commission splits. You may have a brokerage that says, listen, we'll give you a 95% commission split. Sounds amazing, but they can give you that and they can, have you sit at a desk and you're not going to do anything. 95% of zero is zero. seriously, I mean, it's very attractive to look at a brokerage that is offering a ridiculous commission split. There's a reason they're offering a ridiculous commission split, and it's usually not because they're the best brokerage in town. When you're starting out, you want training. It's a whole new industry. I don't think anyone ever, wakes up when they're 8 years old and goes, hey, I want to be an astronaut and I want to be a real estate agent. It's not like that. No one thinks of it like that way. No one makes this their first priority. So go and learn. I would say seek out the potential to be, essentially an apprentice to someone who's been doing it for a while. If you feel in your gut that maybe you're not getting the best training or maybe this person who's your mentor isn't the best, go find another one. There's like 50,000 licensed agents in Massachusetts. It's insane. There's another one out there. If you ever feel like you're doing something that, maybe isn't the right thing to do, maybe it's a little leave. Get out of there. Go find somewhere else. You want to make sure that it's ethical and that they're teaching you and they're training you. And that's got to be consistent. I mean, training – there's no end to training in a business like this. There's always new best practices. I mean, you're competing against yourself too. So, that first year I made $45,000. Hey, there's a ton of other agents that made a lot more money than that. So I knew that there was a lot of ways for me to go. And as there still is. So, keep learning, keep growing, and really, really look for an office that does great training and do your research on what the training is. That's what I would say.
That's awesome advice. Well, I have one last question for you, which is you have the mic and you're being recorded. So, is there anything else you'd like to say? Anything we missed?
This is really great. It was very in-depth. I think that last part I said there really, said it all, because once you start in the industry and you feel that you're actually getting good training, be committed to that. And, be committed to that for you're learning a new field in which people make millions of dollars, a year from. Mm-hmm. It's not going to always happen overnight. And I would also say this too, I guess, which I didn't mention, and, maybe it's a Keller Williams thing. Follow the models. There's models out there that agents have put in place for – this is how I run my business, where I get to net $1 million a year. My only problem with myself was that I didn't start out that way following that model. If I could do it again, I would do that as well. So, don't be afraid. Don't think you have to reinvent the wheel. There's no reason to when there's other people that have written down and are still doing amazing business. Go and do what they did and stick to it. And don't say, hey, I think I can do better if I do this. No, when you're 10 years into it and you want to go play around with, the model and, shake it up a little bit, that's fine. Once you've done, and reached where you want to reach, don't do it when you're first starting out. Just, fall in line, essentially. Follow the path that's there.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Well, hey, Patrick, I really enjoyed this conversation.
I did too. Thanks for having me, Kevin. I pleasantly surprised with how awesome this was.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, look for a message from me in the very near future.
And I will.
Have a great evening.
Thank you. You as well. Take care.
You too. Bye now.
Bye, Kevin.